In 2022, New York convened the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council to help guide state policymakers on how to successfully cut the rate of child poverty in half over the next decade. And while that's obviously a long-term goal, the work really starts in 2023. So we want to consider what's being proposed this year that might begin to address the child poverty rates in the Empire State, and also highlight some of the proposals that could make a difference and aren't part of the discussion at the Capitol, at least right now. To do all that, we're joined in the Capitol Press Room by Jason Cohn, Chief Public Policy Officer for Robinhood, a nonprofit focusing on poverty in the five boroughs, and is also represented on the state's Child Poverty Advisory Council. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you for having me, David.
Well, let's start with the governor's proposal from February. What, if anything, did her budget contain as regards to new policies or expanded investments in current policies that might have a proven track record of combating child poverty?
Thanks for that question, David. It's really, really important one. It's one of the roles of the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council to assess the executive budget proposal. For the most part, most of the proposals have more of an indirect effect on child poverty, meaning that they're not going to sort of make an immediate impact on lifting children and their families above the poverty line, which essentially means raising incomes for those families so they can make ends meet. One of the proposals that could have a major impact, if it were to be improved upon, is the governor's proposal increasing the minimum wage and indexing it to inflation so it actually counts for the real expenses that New Yorkers are feeling right now with the high rates of inflation. That's probably the one that could have this most significant potential. There are other investments in childcare, which is really important to helping families able to, work, and for parents to be able to access jobs and education programs to increase earnings. There is, those efforts as well as some of the programs to invest in summer youth employment programs, which put money in the pockets of teenagers and their families, but is a short-term burst of income, not a sustained one over time. But that's just some of the examples that are in the current executive budget proposal.
So then, is it fair to say that the budget proposal from the governor is essentially reflective of a lot of existing policies and past practices that we've already been utilizing to combat child poverty and are largely reflective of the same sort of scope of investments as we've been making in the past?
For the most part, there are things that the state does currently that really run counter to all the available evidence on what is a smart way of fighting child poverty. And I'll give you one example. The state has a version of the federal child tax credit called the Empire State Child Credit. Right now, that essentially excludes all children under the age of four and the lowest income children from being eligible to that credit, which sort of flies in the face of all the social science research is that if you're going to have a child tax credit, you should target it to the youngest and lowest income families. So right now, 40% of the state's children are excluded from that policy. That's something that's been around for a number of years now. And the costs are really high of those kinds of decisions. So economists estimate that basically New York State is losing about $60 billion a year because of our current child poverty rate. And what does that mean? It means we're losing the productivity of those children essentially being healthier, turning into adults who are earning more and paying more taxes. And $60 billion a year is not insignificant. It's a 3% reduction in our overall economic growth for the state. So fighting child poverty is not only important morally, it's really important sound economic policy as well. So just, one of those examples is really just where changes could be made right now at a relatively small cost compared to the larger budget. It would cost about roughly $250 million or so to fix those problems with the state child credit, and it would reduce child poverty by about 6%. So get us along the way to that 50% reduction goal by the end of the decade.
Well, let's stick with that gap in the credit for kids under four. And we recently had the Senate and Assembly come out with their quote-unquote one-house budgets. These are essentially their wish lists and sort of articulate where they stand heading into budget negotiations. Did either house express an interest in closing that gap that we just talked about?
Yeah, so the Senate include and the Assembly both included removing the under four age of four exclusion, which is a very good and important step. But because it still would preserve the income requirement before a family could qualify for the credit, that leaves out, the lowest income children and also has a highly racially disparate impact. If we want to close some of the racial disparities, fixing that piece of the income requirement and phase in would really address those inadequacies. And that's part of the charge of the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council is to find those policy reforms that would also have an important effect on closing racial disparities.
Well, for listeners just joining us, so you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Jason Cohn, Chief Public Policy Officer for Robinhood, a nonprofit focusing on poverty in the five boroughs. So, outside of this tax credit, were there other initiatives or investments in the One House budgets that could, if part of a final budget, make a difference in addressing New York's child poverty rates?
Absolutely. And I think I'll just come back to the minimum wage for a second on that. So, what we've seen since 2019, when the minimum wage for the state was essentially brought up to $15 downstate, is because of the high rates of inflation, to reach the purchasing power of that wage in 2019, people should be getting at least $17.83 because of inflation. So, across the state, and people are feeling this every day, and the cost of eggs, milk, cheese, all the things they need to put a healthy meal on their plates in their houses for their children and for the rest of the members of the family. It just costs more. It costs more for them to meet those daily needs. So, part of the reason why it's so important to have a robust catch up on the minimum wage is being proposed by Senator Ramos and Assemblymember Joyner through the Ways Raise the Wage Act and then index the wage to inflation. And labor productivity is to sort of take into account the fact that we're in an environment where things cost more, inflation is really hitting people hard. And if you build in things like indexing certain benefits to inflation, we don't have to be in Albany fighting about these issues every year when we have high inflation. The policy just kicks in and it's an automatic process. The other parts would be housing is one of the biggest costs for families across the state. There was a bold initiative by the governor, which didn't make it through in the One Houses, to address the supply gaps in housing across the state. If we could get affordable housing right, that would be an incredible lift for low-income families across the state, not just in New York City. One of the things that the Assembly and the Senate put in was a program called the Housing Access Voucher Program, which is a highly targeted housing voucher program to prevent people who are at risk of homelessness and to help people exit shelters across the state, is something that was included and would be a very good initiative and targeted and could have an effect on child poverty as well.
So when we think about investments in the budget, we have one-time costs, we have recurring costs, and budget officials are usually scared of recurring costs because that means they're on the hook for potentially higher levels of spending for years to come. So when it comes to things like expanding access to childcare or expanding who might be eligible for a tax credit that impacts families, should these be thought of as recurring expenses for the future and on and on and on? Or is it possible that these types of investments, especially when it comes to tax credits, are the types of things that potentially lift people out of poverty and will make them essentially find a way towards self-reliance and don't necessarily require investments for years and years to come? Or should we think of these as state levels of support that are going to be needed for the future, but it makes sense to do it because we're talking about improving people's lives?
Yeah, you make a great point, David. And I mean, you've been covering this town for a long time. The fact of the matter is that when it comes to policies that affect low-income New Yorkers, the burden of proof is exceptionally high for those policies. And they're less so for other things that the state subsidize. Just taking an example, I mentioned what it would cost to close that gap on the child tax credit for the state. For the same amount of money that we're going to invest in the film production tax credit, which the state's own cost benefit analysis has shown that for every dollar you spend on that credit, you get about $1.07 back. Well, if we made some of the reforms that I've been talking about, the Empire State Child Credit, for every dollar the state spends, we would get about $7 to $8 back over time.
What if we just started employing, though, more child actors?
That could be a short-term role, especially if they can get a living wage,
okay,
for sure. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, some of these policies, to your point, they'll have an immediate effect, right? A change in the minimum wage is going to immediately address the poverty rate. It's going to help people pay for food. That's going to have an immediate effect. The child tax credit similarly would do the same thing, but in the long run, and that's sometimes it's harder to sell those policies because I think politicians think within the frameworks of their election cycles for things. But 5-10 years down the road, when we are still paying a fixed amount roughly on the child tax credit, the returns are going to be much higher in years 5, 10, 15, 20, because those kids who are now healthier didn't spend time in the prisons that the state doesn't have to pay for because there are less kids thrown in there, are going to be earning more, paying more taxes. And that's where we get that $7 delta between the kinds of policies we're talking about here and those that are actually getting thrown into the budget today.
Well, then based on the governor's budget and the initial response from the legislature with its one house budgets and what we've seen of the few meetings that the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council has had so far, do you feel like we are headed toward cutting the rate of child poverty in half in 10 years?
Not on the current trajectory that we're on, but part of the mandate of that council is to make a plan. And that plan can only really be taken seriously if it is evaluated through an objective lens based on evidence and data and is divorced from the politics. We know that there's going to be, and the council has contracted with the Urban Institute, which is a national leader on anti-poverty reduction strategies. They're going to come forward with a set of recommendations, and it's the council's, you know, mission and charge to really evaluate those and see what comes into a final plan. You know, whether or not that a plan is supported by the governor, whether or not the legislature is willing to take the risk to put the money behind it is another question, and that's a political question. And which gets at the heart really of these issues, which is child poverty is a choice. It's a political choice. It always has been and will continue to be. And until those in Albany make the needs of those kids and those families a top political issue and a priority, it will be down to politics, not evidence, because we have all the evidence we need to end this problem today if we wanted to. We'll wait to the end of the decade if necessary. But right now, we're not on the path to that. We hope to be on the path when this council reviews a solid plan, and hopefully there's the political will of those leaders in Albany to actually make it happen.
Well, we've been speaking with Jason Cohn. He's the Chief Public Policy Officer for Robinhood. Jason, thank you so much for making the time, and fingers crossed they'll be playing this interview at the next meeting of the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council.
Thanks so much for your time, David. Really appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. Visit unionstrongny.org for more information.